Listen to this. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God. And the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him, everything was made. Without him, nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of mankind. And that light shone in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world. And though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. And he came to his own, but they did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children not born of natural descent or human decision or the will of a husband, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. John begins his firsthand account of Jesus and his life with this sweeping recalibration of what is real. It's a cosmic reminder of the essence of everything. It's too bad John wasn't with me in a coffee shop about a month and a half back. It would have been really helpful to have him there. I was overhearing a conversation between an older man and a younger man. Could have been father, son. The man was probably 60 or so. I wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but it was a small room. You pretty much couldn't hear whatever, couldn't even not hear them, really. And then he leaned forward, the older guy leaned forward, and he said something like this: I just don't know what to believe anymore. Everything feels made up. Every side has its spin. Every voice has an angle. And his upshot was this: I just want to know what's real. I feel that. And it's not just disillusion with political systems and the news or the flood of voices in the internet. It's deeper than that. It's deeper than that. God built this world. He built this world with a particular set of foundations, absolutes, natural laws, you might say, moorings. He built this world with a way that it works. A reality for life deeper than our preferences that are essential for human flourishing. God designed this world to work in a certain way, placed us in it to work within that certain way so that we might flourish. Wisdom in the Proverbs, chapter 3 particularly, says this. Wisdom says, do not forget my teaching. for they will prolong your life for many years and bring you peace and prosperity. Wisdom says, don't forget my teaching. The psalmist says, blessed are those who walk according to the law of the Lord. God says through the prophet Isaiah, if only you had paid attention to my commands, your peace would have been like a river. And Jesus himself says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. Can you hear it? Can you hear the foundations? Can you hear the invitation to live within the constraints and the commands and the ways that God has designed the world so that you might have the very thing you long for, peace and blessing and rest? We were created by God, placed into this creation, and logic holds that living within the design and the constraints of the Creator is going to be the best way to live. It's a hard thing to say in a culture where freedom is sacred. You understand what I'm saying to you? We live in a culture that says, it's not anybody's business to constrain me in any way. I don't care who you are or what God you believe in. My freedom is mine and it's sacred. We're told by this world that you should believe whatever you want, say whatever you want, define morality however you want. So the reality of God is a very hard pill to swallow. But here's the truth. We lose our humanity without the anchors of reality. We lose our humanity without the anchors of reality. Have you ever flown a kite? For some reason, I love flying kites. Used to love to watch my boys fly kites. One of my favorite pictures is my six-year-old little Shay flying a kite with big old lollipop in his mouth. It's a beautiful picture. Kites are an amazing thing. It's actually aerodynamic. It's a wing. When you attach a string to that kite and fly that kite up there into the air, you are managing a feat of physics, an aerodynamic amazement. You can even guide it left and right when you shift and shape the camber of the kite. No one normally knows that stuff's going on, but that's what's happening. And the truth of the matter is that kite has those characteristics not only within the design of the kite itself, because of the constraint of the string. That string, often invisible, that line holds it steady and allows the kite to enjoy all of the characteristics of a wing. If you cut that line, what doesn't happen is the kite doesn't stay stable and fly to new heights. It loses its capacity entirely. It will just flip and tumble and fall to the earth. It has no capacity to be the kite that it was intended to be without that string, without that mooring, without that attachment to the earth. I just read you some verses that talk, and you can find thousands of these verses that speak about the construct that God's put into the world, that he calls us to live according to. Listen to how James puts it. He says, whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom. Do you hear how radical that is? That's not what you would naturally think when you look into the constraints of the law of God, that it's providing me freedom. But James says, whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, they will be blessed in what they do. John's saying, look, we're like kites. We're meant to soar, to be beautiful, to move and bob and weave. But without the line, without the constraint, we actually are not free to be a kite. When you obscure, ignore, deny the core truth of the world, it's deeply disorienting. You end up mentally and emotionally floating, spinning, grasping for insufficient stabilizers. Are you with me? When you obscure, ignore, or deny the core truths of the world that God created, it is deeply disorienting. Many of the mental health crises and issues we have today and all through history can often be tied back to the ability, to the idea that somebody is not facing the truth about life. Losing touch with the grounding truths and the healthy boundaries that bring about refreshment and blessing and peace within us. A young parent not too long ago asked me, we were talking about the challenges of discipline and boundaries that they're setting in their child's life. And I said, yeah, I get it. It's hard. It's one of the hardest things. But I said, know this. You aren't just affecting their behavior when you do that. It is soul-level work. When you set boundaries and you hold them, you're doing deep, deep work. No one likes it. No kid between the ages of 2 and 30 and older are going to thank you. Rarely are they going to thank you for setting a boundary that they prefer not to have. But something deep enough begins to rest when we know that someone is holding the edges. And in a child's life, without that, they might feel free without it. But I can assure you, they will feel anxious. Not knowing where those lines are, where those boundaries are. And it's not just kids. Adults, we are all walking around with these same anxieties. The older man at the coffee shop is saying, I want to know and feel what's real and enjoy the internal rest that results. We are not in the end desperate for freedom. We're desperate for reality. After overhearing that guy in the coffee shop, I started thinking about what's real, in some ways on a superficial level. So just on my next long drive, I was going to South Bend. I visited a friend a couple weeks back. Saw a lot of corn on my way there. I just started thinking, okay, what's real? And a lot of them were real easy, right? The road I was driving on was real. And I thought, the corn is real. If I was eating that corn, the sweetness would be undeniably real. As I was driving, I was realizing my backache was real, reminded me of my age, which is real. Some things got a little more interesting to think about. I looked at the fluffy white clouds and I thought, those clouds are real. But then I recalled flying through those clouds, and you've probably done the same thing, and they don't seem white and fluffy at all when you're flying through them. They seem kind of gray and dismal. In either case, both are real, but it's kind of different. I saw wind. Not really, though. I saw trees bending and leaves being rearranged. So I knew I saw wind, but I didn't really see the wind. But it's real. I saw heat coming up off the road, and when I got there, it wasn't there. And it can get complicated. I thought, I have certain fears that are real, but some of those fears are based on things that aren't real. There are some very legitimate threats that cause fear, and then there are some other misunderstandings or shadows or assumptions that cause fear, and the origin of my fear is not real. I started considering all the things that we wonder about the depth of reality. Started thinking about particular relationships that I have and ones that I can unequivocally, undeniably depend upon, and then others that I'm not sure how real the relationship is. We all live with that sort of anxiety, right? It's like, oh, is this, you're leaning on someone, you're trusting in someone, and then they might buckle. They might abandon you. We don't know. Confidence, right? I generally probably seem confident to you, and in many cases I am confident. Internally, I'm actually not confident quite a bit. So I don't know, is my confidence real? What about my health? Feel pretty healthy. And then you hear about the diagnosis or the sudden out of the clear blue catastrophic heart thing, and you start thinking, am I 1 minute away from how healthy am I, really? Am I still providing value in the work that I do? How safe am I? Do people like me? Seems like they do. What do they say later? What's real? John begins his gospel with a massive recalibration of reality. He doesn't start with a birth story. He doesn't start with a genealogy. There's no miracles. An epic poem rises above creation and time, and with it, he intends to shift a perspective of reality entirely about where it is grounded. I want you to stand with me for a minute, and we're going to read together the very words that I recited to you at the beginning. We'll do like a responsive thing. I'll do the leader part, you do the congregational part. And let me give you a hint. When you get to the word he or him, accentuate that word. All right, let's see what we got here. In the beginning was the Word.
And the Word was with God. And the Word was God.
He was with God in the beginning.
Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made.
In him was life. Yeah, listen to that. Make yourselves comfortable. Before molecules and calendars and commandments, there was something. There was the Word. If you read it in the Greek, it would be logos. And the Greeks loved their logos. It was considered a thread of reason that held the universe together, the order beneath the chaos. They're close. The Jews also had logos, this word. It wasn't the thread of reason, it was the voice of God that spoke the world into being and sustained it. And John doesn't necessarily choose between those ideas, he just drives deeper into it and he pushes even beyond it. He says the Word was more than the order of God beneath the chaos of the world. It's more than the voice of God. This entity, this reality, this Word was God. Now, he's echoing Genesis, right? If you're familiar with the very first words of the Bible. But where does Genesis start? What exists at the beginning of Genesis? It's a void. It's nothing. John starts with presence. He sets reality on an entirely new foundation, and he aims to disrupt and tear down every existing perception of what is real and where reality can be found and where it originates. He is tipping over the entire apple cart. The Greeks had reason. The Jews had revelation. Rome had its civic order. The barbarians had their powerful conquests, and modern humanity bows to to the sovereign self. Personal autonomy, self-rule. I am the locus of truth and meaning. But John says, y'all aiming too low. Everybody. Those are all shadows. John is saying that the root of reality is a prehistoric person. Not like caveman prehistoric, like prehistory. In the beginning, before anything, there was a person, and he, the origin of all reality, shot through time, condensed, turned into flesh, and showed up. In the beginning was the Word. Before anything was the presence. He, him, God, Jesus, he shoots all the way through time. Everything is created through him, and then he fires through it and becomes part of the creation that was created. And John's saying, if you want to see the truth, you want to understand anything, yourself, the world, your purpose, you have got to start in square one. Jesus, the eternal and universal core of all of reality. When John wrote the beautiful cosmic overture, he's not providing a new theory, right? He's not creating a myth on which the New Testament can find its roots and continue to grow out of. He's declaring something that was already there, always there, but one we couldn't see rightly. And the reason we couldn't see it, because we've been taught to trust the wrong things. John's trying to correct all that. When I was training to be a pilot, we learned a bunch of physiological things that you wouldn't otherwise really think about because they come into play when you're flying around in the air. One of those things is the inner ear and how it works, the fluids in your ear. Because here's what happens. When you're in an airplane, you can check this out yourself the next time you fly. When you accelerate, you get the sense that your nose is going up because of the way the fluid works. When you decelerate, slow down, it feels like your nose is dropping. If you don't know that, and you live your life the way you normally live your life and react to what your ears are telling your brain, when you're low to the ground and it seems like your nose is going up and you push over to correct for that, it's not only wrong, it's deadly. And you have to override these feelings in your head and believe your eyes and believe your instruments, particularly if you're in the weather. It's very disorienting in the weather. Everything is telling you you're going up or you're going down. It's very easy to get disoriented. It takes a lot of work to distrust an entire set of embedded and urgent sensations and perceptions to fly straight. That's what John's inviting us into, and that's what he's suggesting. You're trusting a lot of things, and it feels so right, but it's deadly. You cannot find peace. You cannot find life. There's all kinds of reality models that we have circling around us and that we probably embrace in different ways. Here's just a couple, just to kind of get you thinking in this direction. Self-expression says that identity is something that you invent rather than discover through love and design and relationship. Curated image. This says that if the image that you hold out front can be maintained, the inner reality doesn't really matter that much. Autonomy. Freedom leads to flourishing. Are you with me? Can you put yourself into some of these spaces? Think, how much of that am I living according to? Progress. The great Western pursuit. That motion equals meaning. That advancement equals meaning. That more is always better. How about the reality model of comfort? That life should be optimized for the least amount of pain rather than being forged through the realities of pain. When Jesus healed the blind, and he's doing it like all the time. You ever notice that? That's one of the things he really enjoyed doing. He wasn't only moved by compassion. He was making a point. Without me, everyone is blind. And the and as a result, we trust the wrong things. We build our lives on false realities. If the deepest realities of life aren't the latest fads and ideologies, how do we start to see? How do I see where I've bought into the wrong realities or false realities, even better? How do I allow the light of Jesus to shine into my world and my heart and allow me to see what I otherwise couldn't see? Well, you got to start by getting to know him. He's real and he lives and he engages in multiple ways through his word, through his children, through his church, through his spirit. It's worth noting, I started down this path just a little bit ago, that Jesus wasn't creating a myth when he sat down to write John. Maybe I'll put it this way. In the beginning was the word, and maybe I'll take that logos, which he did, and I'll flip it, and we'll paint this picture. He wasn't creating that out of nothing, ex nihilo. John arguably knew Jesus better than anybody. And of his experiences and his understanding and his knowledge of Jesus led him to describe him in this way. I want you to think about that for a minute. He experienced a person in such a way that it only made sense to say that he's always existed and that everything in life came about through him. Are you with me? What must a person be like to compel you to draft words about him that say, this guy has always existed? All that is real in the world came from this guy. Like, this is what John concluded. It's not what he made up. He could find no other explanation given his real life experience with Jesus in the dust of life, around the table, in the grief, through the failures, in light of biological implications of turning water into wine, meteorological control over the weather. John couldn't get his head around the unparalleled power of this man, yet the endless sincerity and compassion and deference, unnerving insight, someone with the weight of the world literally on their shoulders, but was unwaveringly peaceful. This guy is everything. This guy, he's like, how do I get this across? What we find in Jesus is what we need to embrace reality. The most important things of life we find in him. The building blocks of life are epitomized in him. The string on our kite is him. And this is where we're headed in this series. Here's some hints. Forgiveness, reconciliation, authenticity, sacrifice, gratitude, fearless faith, humility, eternity, compassion. The stuff of Jesus is the stuff of reality. And the more that we know him and incorporate the stuff of Jesus in us and through us by his Spirit, reality becomes firm, the string becomes clear, the wing can fly. Here's the big questions. To wrap up our time with, what instincts and practices that are in your own life might you need to consider as false realities or built on false realities? What are the instincts and the practices that are in your own life? This is something you must begin to ponder, that you must consider as potentially false. You don't have to make the whole leap to my life is a lie. You just have to have the posture of being willing to see something that's very important to see. That's the first step. What are some of the things, the second step, what are some of the things I need to consider? Let me help you with this. What are some things you're afraid of losing? What are some things that you're obsessed about? Where is it that you think you'll find peace of mind? Security. Love. Those pursuits are good pursuits. How we find them makes all the difference in the world and where we find them. Are you thinking of some things? Let me make this a little less personal so you're willing to shout out some answers and not expose yourself. What are some common things that are coming to your mind, false realities for people that you may observe and see in the world? What are some of the things that need to be reconsidered? Finances? Appearance? Career, if I heard that right. What's that? How much other people like you? Yeah, it's huge. Health, yeah. Remember, we're flying a little blind without Jesus, without his insight, without his voice. We're basing our decisions on what seems right. And it's very hard to work against what seems right. It feels almost unconscionable, almost irresponsible to consider something that doesn't feel internally right. What practices can you take to allow some of this light to shine into your heart? What can you do in your week that affords you the opportunity to possibly see a little bit better? Create some margin just to listen. taken a step of courage in a particular relationship and have these kinds of discussions? Read the first chapter of John multiple times. We're gonna focus on literally 18 verses for 6 weeks. Some of you are thinking, well, I guess I can skip church for at least 3 or 4 of those weeks. I already read it. No, we're going deeper. Here's the last one. What do you already know about Jesus' teaching? What have you already been enlightened about, but are tentative to embrace, that you might want to try trusting, at least as an experiment? God, we are lost without you, and we're so very grateful for the efforts that you've made, particularly through your Son, to reveal to us who you are and what the true realities of life are. God, would you give us eyes to see it, ears to hear it, and the faith to try it. In Jesus' name, amen.